been sitting empty for nearly 2 years. Tomorrow, that changes. Baseball is back in Toronto. The Blue Jays ready to welcome fans who've been waiting for this moment. Good evening. Rain or shine, 15,000 people will be allowed inside the Rogers Centre.
The Boys of Summer are home, their return marking a significant moment in this pandemic that extends beyond sports. CTV's Sean Leithong is live on Bremner Boulevard with more. Sean?
Well, Pauline and Nathan, it's hard to imagine in just over a day. The doors behind me will be open. There'll be fans going inside, but the experience will be a little bit different than we're used to.
The logo that is synonymous with summer is here. Merchandise sits waiting for customers. The field is waiting for the players. In just one more day, the Toronto Blue Jays once again will be home.
Because it's a celebration. It has been 670 days since we have been home, and we are pumped about it.
It was September of 2019, the last time the team played a home game in Toronto. For the homecoming, each of the 15,000 fans allowed to enter will find a T-shirt marking the occasion on their seat, and they will notice a lot that is different inside the dome.
Masks are required at all times in the seats and on the concourse, except when actively eating or drinking.
Fans are also able to choose between physically distanced and non-distanced seating. Other COVID-19 protocols at the Rogers Centre include using digital ticket for contact tracing. Fans will be asked a verbal questionnaire before entering, and anything you buy will be a cashless purchase. Under Step 3, gatherings in an outdoor stadium can be as high as 15,000 people, but that number falls to just 1,000 people for an indoor event. In the event of rain on the day of a game, the Rogers Centre will continue to have 15,000 tickets available thanks to some modifications.
Partial roof panel openings. We're going to have all of our exterior doors open, and we will be refreshing the air every 15 minutes.
And one more thing from a health and safety perspective that fans will notice immediately when they get to their seats. This along the entire infield netting that was put up for last season, but no fans have seen it until now.
On the other side of the net, there is a big change that may be hard to notice.
We got a brand new turf.
Head groundskeeper Tom Farrell says the new turf is permanent compared with the old turf that could be taken out for concerts, and it's much softer.
And that adds to the shock absorption value of the whole field.
And if the excitement of coming home is worth more than a T-shirt, the Jays shop will have fan favorites and some new additions.
So our hot off the press item is the Vladdy All-Star tees, which are right over here.
So with a young team looking to make a splash and a home crowd looking to embrace the team again, it looks like this weekend will be about getting back to business.
And on that note, the game starts at 7:07 tomorrow night against Kansas City, but they're asking fans to come down earlier just so they can get through the lines because they will have that questionnaire, but also there will be ceremonies before the game. They want fans in the stadium as soon as 6:30. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. As large events return to the Rogers Centre, security enhancements are also coming back. Police will enforce road restrictions before and during home games. Area residents and employees will be able to enter, but they may be asked for proof of address. And for those attending games, drop-off and pickup will only be available on Front Street. Accessibility vehicles can stop on Reese Street and Blue Jays Way.
She is Canada's swimming sensation, and she's looking to make history. Toronto's Penny Oleksiak looking to race her way into the record books, a chance to become Canada's most decorated Olympian ever. At just 21 years old, Oleksiak's ascent to the top of her sport has been remarkable.
Tonight in her second Olympics, she has a chance to win her seventh medal. Her family, her city, and her country cheering her on. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Nathan, it's such a big night for Penny Oleksiak, her family, and yes, the whole country. Her family will be watching together here in Toronto, together doing everything they can to wish her on from the couch.
Penny is in place, Norman and Beener in place with Jamie.
Together in Toronto, it's a family affair watching six-time Olympic medalist Penny Oleksiak compete in Tokyo, along with Oleksiak's dogs, Bean and Norman.
My mom is very superstitious.
Although this is Jamie more than me.
I don't know. It's a mixture of you and Jamie. But basically, we have a whole system where I think it's Jamie, me, mom on the couch.
Right.
That you kind of...
Nervous on the one end.
Yeah, on the one end. And then dad sits either on a chair or yesterday he was...
Wandering.
From Toronto, Oleksiak is the youngest of five siblings, now swimming superstar and good sister.
She's this incredibly inspiring human being, and she's this, you know, really amazing, inspiring, incredible athlete. But then at home, she's just kind of like my little sister who just likes to hang out and watch movies.
Tonight, Oleksiak is back in the pool, going for gold in the 100-meter freestyle, looking to defend her gold medal from Rio when she was just 16 years old. She's now 21, and if she wins any medal tonight, she'll be the most decorated Canadian Olympian ever, with a total of 7 medals. Her mother says she manages pressure by taking one race at a time.
Michael Phelps was very kind that he reached out to her to help her, which was absolutely awesome. And, you know, we always joke, I never know whether we should be calling him Mr. Phelps, or you feel a little familiar if you say him Michael Phelps, but anyway. But he was actually really good at taking the time and just, you know, telling her that you really don't need to approach this, that you have to be perfect all the time. You've got to really recognize that, you know, you've got to be comfortable in yourself.
Oleksiak's family says cheering from home means more video calls with Penny, and will be wishing her the best once again tonight.
And I don't think you breathe for about 2 minutes. Like, you just can't, or however long the race is, you just don't breathe. You're like, all right, here we go. Okay, she's gonna go.
So you're trying to send those positive vibes, and but at the end of the day, it's in her hands, right? Like, at the end of the day, there's so many other factors that come into play, and all you can hope is that all of the stars essentially align. And
very proud of everything she's accomplished, whichever way this next race goes. Oleksiak's mother was telling me that initially Penny was really into gymnastics as much as swimming. And really her advice to parents is to let their children try as much as they can and see what they do best, and then let it go from there. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Beth. Just ahead, the pair on the podium, the rowers taking bronze and the other Canadians in contention in Tokyo.
Well, what a difference a few hours makes. Relentless rain this morning, now sunshine peeking through. Nalina Sharma is here with us. Look at the current conditions. It's nice out now.
Pauline, it's actually not bad. We've had some sunshine. You're exactly right. We've had sunshine, we've had rain, humidity, and we've also had the cloud cover. So just before I came down to the studio, I was looking outside right here at 401 in McCown. It was cloudy. Maybe there's some sunshine out at the moment, but we are starting to settle down as we make our way into tomorrow. This is our satellite radar. There's not a whole lot of activity. In terms of the humidex, that's sort of the other weather story for today. It's been quite humid for the lower Great Lakes. Right now, sitting anywhere from about 25 to 26 with the humidity. For example, Windsor right now, there's just this pocket of heat. The temperature sitting at 30, feeling closer to 38, closer to the Toronto area. We are currently holding steady at 28, 32 at Pearson, with the winds right now just under about 25 kilometers an hour. There's still a risk of a few passing showers into the evening and showers into the long-range forecast. I'll have those details in the next few minutes.
All right, thanks, Nalini. CTV's Austin Delaney's next. Hearing from the victim of an assault. And Austin, the man believes he was targeted because he's Jewish.
And the Jewish community reeling tonight after this man complained that he was assaulted on this quiet street, thrown into that fence behind me, and subjected to racial slurs. Sam Brody was walking his dog Oakley down his young Eglinton area street yesterday morning when he says he was assaulted by a man passing him by.
And as we passed him right about here, he stopped and body checked me into the fence here. I fell down to the ground, at which point he yelled at me,
swearing at Brody and making anti-Semitic remarks. The 29-year-old man had recently moved to this neighborhood and says he believes he was targeted because he was wearing a kippah, a Jewish skullcap, while out walking.
I was scared. Like, I don't know what he was going to do after that. You know, when people say something when they walk by, sometimes they'll say something back. But, like, in this case, it was just somebody to hit me like that out of the blue and knock me to the ground and say something like that. I don't know what he's going to do next either. I was scared. I'm still kind of scared now and shaken up.
And worried the man lives in the neighborhood and they will run into each other again.
I'm coming to you to make a video that I hoped I would never have to make.
Brody posted his account of the incident on Facebook, and as we were talking to him on his street, Eden Spodek recognized him from the posting.
I'm very sorry this happened to you.
B'nai B'rith Canada writes in a statement, this brazen assault comes amid an unprecedented surge in physical attacks on Canadian Jews.
I think it's horrible. I can't believe this is 2021 and this is happening in Toronto. I've lived here most of my life. I lived in a smaller center where I know what it's like to really be a minority and be Jewish. Yeah, it's just very disturbing and distressing. All hate crimes to me are equally disturbing and distressing.
When it comes to instances of anti-Semitism, according to B'nai B'rith Canada, in May of this year, there were 154 incidents of harassment, 51 incidents of vandalism, 61 incidents of violence.
It's not acceptable. And that's why, you know, we trust that police will find the perpetrator, that the person will be prosecuted under the law. There needs to be consequences, and individuals need to know that there was a red line when it comes to hate. Hateful acts, hateful rhetoric will not be tolerated in this country.
Brody says it is not the first time he has been the target of anti-Semitic remarks.
It's just a very scary time to be a Jewish person in Toronto and across Canada.
And we contacted Toronto police. They are aware of the complaint. It is under investigation. Tonight we could see police officers going door to door looking for witnesses and videotape. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. Also tonight, recommendations to address systemic racism in policing. The new report from Ontario's Human Rights Commission and why some say progress isn't being made.
For the first time in 3 weeks, Ontario is seeing more than 200 new cases of COVID-19. 218 new cases are reported today. That brings the province's total to nearly 550,000 over the course of the pandemic. 169 more cases are considered resolved, raising that figure to more than 539,000. And three more deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,328 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Today's total comes from more than 19,000 tests. The positivity rate sits at 1.3%, and more than 8,000 tests remain under investigation.
The regional breakdown across the GTA includes 38 new cases in both Toronto and Peel, with 25 new cases in Hamilton. There are 12 new cases in Halton, with 10 in York Region, 8 in Durham, and 1 in Niagara.
Meanwhile, parents, students, and teachers are looking ahead to next week for details of what schools will look like in September.
A component of that could depend on just how many young people are vaccinated between now and then. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin?
And Pauline, we are already starting to see some local public health units and some school boards go in the direction of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, saying there will be advantages for those who get their COVID-19 vaccine. Other school boards are wondering, though, whether the new policy is equitable and fair. As students prepare to return to the classroom for the first time since April, the province's new vaccination policy is giving some reassurance.
With the vaccines, going back to school will be a little more safer in terms of we won't have to go from being in person to online to back to in person being online.
Ontario's Chief Medical Officer of Health said those who are unvaccinated would face mandatory 10 days of self-isolation if they're exposed to someone with COVID-19 and would be required to take two tests 7 days apart. School boards are now trying to determine how best to implement that policy.
This is an extremely difficult discussion, and from an equity perspective, it seems not equitable.
The back-to-school vaccination rules have been followed by a vacuum of information on the new policy. Will students be required to submit their vaccination status when they register? Will students with one dose be treated as vaccinated or unvaccinated? And will educators be subject to the same rules as students?
We'd like to have as many people as possible vaccinated. And for those who aren't, we will be here to support them. But, you know, there might be some repercussions for them going into a system where the expectation is the majority will be vaccinated.
There is also considerable anxiety among parents questioning exactly which age groups would be affected.
I'm hearing major concern from parents of children that are under 12. So, you know, how is it fair that these much more difficult rules are being applied to children who simply don't qualify for the vaccine yet?
Critics are calling for immediate clarity.
This, again, shows us that the government has very poorly communicated to Ontarians what the expectations are.
The premier says the back-to-school plan will be revealed next week. Contrary to what the Chief Medical Officer of Health was likely hoping, there hasn't been a dramatic surge in the number of young people going to get their vaccine. So far, 65% of people aged 12 to 17 have one dose, while 44.5% have two doses. Reporting live from Colin DeMello. Pauline, over to you.
Thanks, Colin. More than 89,000 vaccine doses were administered in Ontario yesterday, pushing the province's total to nearly 19.3 million. Roughly 17,000 of those doses were first shots, meaning more than 10.4 million people are partially vaccinated, and more than 72,000 of yesterday's shots were second doses, increasing the number of people in Ontario who are fully vaccinated to more than 8.8 million.
Nearly four in five eligible people across Ontario have received at least one vaccine, a mark of an immunization campaign that's making an impact.
But as CTV's John Woodward reports, the picture looks a lot less rosy when you include the children.
The thought of going back to school has nine-year-old Elise Seipel doing cartwheels.
I'm very excited to see all my friends.
But it's her mom, Lindsay, who might be a bit more flipped out.
You've got the majority of the kids in a K to 8 school are going to be that group that are not yet eligible and don't have that vaccine ability to even get the vaccines. So that makes me very nervous.
No one under 12 is eligible for any vaccine, and the implications go farther than the classroom.
But the Delta variant, children are as efficient as adults in terms of spread. So they are a critical part of the population to ultimately get vaccinated.
Provincial figures show 79.6% of the population 12 and over have received at least one dose. That drops to 69.9% when children are included, with similar figures in Toronto.
Do the math. Like, if 12% of the population is under 12, that means 88% is the best we could do if everybody got vaccinated. So in other words, we cannot achieve herd immunity without vaccinating kids.
Including those children, the map looks bleaker. The areas in red are those which provincial figures show there are as many as one in three people who have not received even one shot. That includes 17 postal code zones in Toronto, nine in Hamilton, six in Peel, and six in Durham. By that measure, Thorncliffe Park, for example, has four in 10 people without any vaccines, despite months of targeting, because officials say it's home to a large number of youth under 12 years old who are not eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine in Canada. The effect of the vaccine on children is being examined now, with preliminary results for ages 5 to 11 expected in the fall, and for those under 5 expected in the winter.
But until they actually submit the approval, we know that our children are unprotected.
Elise plans to socially distance and wear a mask.
Like, the numbers don't go up if we follow the rules.
Hoping those measures keep COVID on the run. John Woodward, CTV News.
The Ontario Human Rights Commission says there is a problem with policing in this province, and officials must act to dismantle systemic racism.
Calling on the government to restructure the rules that allow it to persist. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
The police gunfire that killed 18-year-old Sami Yateem on a streetcar. The shooting death of 45-year-old Andrew Loku in the hallway of his apartment building. And the fatal fall of Regis Korchinski-Paquette following a call to 911. All highlighted as deadly outcomes involving police responses to racialized people in crisis. In a new report from the Ontario Human Rights Commission.
It's no longer an issue of a single police officer or a single police service, and it's broader than the best efforts of an individual localized response. We need province-wide leadership, and we need it on an urgent basis.
The commission now calling on the Ontario government to implement 10 specific steps to address systemic racism in policing, including promoting non-police responses to mental health calls, regulating stop and question practices in non-arrest scenarios, and amending the use of force model so that officers are required to use de-escalation techniques.
We believe that everyone has a responsibility to do their part to break down systemic racism, including those in policing.
The commission also calling on the province to improve transparency in police discipline, allow greater public disclosure during SIU investigations, and implement a Crown pre-charge screening process to address the overcharging of racialized people.
The issues themselves are important issues. Are there some police officers across this country or in Ontario that are racist? Yes, some are. But is that a pervasive thing across all organizations? No.
The late night stops, the indiscriminatory violence, the bias against people of color and Indigenous people persists today, no matter what anybody says.
The province stresses that it is already working on a new framework for use of force, officer code of conduct, transparency, and accountability, but that it will take time to review the commission's recommendations, saying that it remains committed to addressing systemic racism. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
And you can read more from the commission's report on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca.
The number of forest fires burning in northwestern Ontario has gone down slightly, but that drop isn't expected to last. There are 136 active fires in the region after 157 were reported yesterday. Significant lightning activity was confirmed during scattered showers yesterday, and that may have sparked more fires. Officials tell CTV News that a lot more rain would be needed to change the fire situation, while thousands of evacuees are still displaced.
In BC, returning heat and low humidity threatened to hamper firefighting efforts through Saturday. 246 blazes are burning across the province. 37 of them are posing a potential threat to public safety or are highly visible. Lightning has been a major problem, sparking 75% of all the active fires. Flames have charred more than 4,500 square kilometers of bush since April.
The federal government is responding to criticism. It's not acting fast enough to help Afghans who have worked with our military and other Canadians in the war-torn country.
We are very, very grateful for your work, and we absolutely recognize the responsibility we have towards you and your families.
The Afghan interpreters and others who helped Canada now face retaliation from the Taliban. Ottawa insists it wants to have them on planes as soon as possible. This week, the Immigration Department released an application form for eligible Afghans, but it was only in English. And there was a 72-hour deadline that has since been walked back.
Returning to the games, the women and the water is Canada's Olympic story so far.
And that theme continued today, bringing our total medal count to 10. As we saw earlier with Toronto's Penny Oleksiak, Canadian women in the water are making waves. CTV's Lois Lee has the details.
After five medals from the Canadian swimming and diving teams, Kaylee Filmer and Hillary Janssens are bringing home bronze in the pair rowing event. Janssens says choppy seas couldn't slow them down.
It was fast, but when it's fast, it's a little bit bumpy in the rowing boat because they're pretty tippy and very sensitive to what your bodies are doing. And in a tailwind, it's even more precarious, and you got to be really careful, but it's the Olympic finals, so we didn't really want to be careful. We wanted to go out hard.
Canada's most decorated summer Olympian, Toronto swimmer Penny Oleksiak, narrowly missed out on her seventh career medal as the 4x200-meter freestyle team swam to a fourth-place finish despite setting a new Canadian record. But Oleksiak has a shot at another medal after qualifying for tonight's 100-meter freestyle final. A terrific start for Canada's Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes, each shot a 2-under in the first round of the Olympic golf tournament. Canada's women's rugby sevens team hopes to improve on their bronze medal finish in Rio as they split a pair of games against Brazil and Fiji in day one action. The Canadian women's basketball team bounced back from a tough opening game loss to beat South Korea by 21 points. And Canadian beach volleyball duo Sarah Pavin and Melissa Humana-Paradis are moving on to the elimination round after a straight sets victory over Switzerland. Lois Lee, CTV News.
Meanwhile, an American medal hopeful has been forced to withdraw from the games after testing positive for COVID-19.
It comes on a day when case numbers continue to spike in the host city. CTV's Joy Malbin has the latest from Tokyo.
Here in Tokyo, COVID is still overshadowing these games. Japan is reporting a record high of infections since the pandemic began. In the Olympic bubble, U.S. pole vaulter Sam Kendricks, the world champion, will miss the games after he tested positive for the virus. And because he interacted with other athletes, the Australian track and field team had to isolate as a precaution. It's a chaotic turn of events at these Olympics, organizers defending their safety protocols.
As far as I'm aware, there's not a single case of an infection spreading to the Tokyo population from the athletes or Olympic movement.
And as if a deadly disease wasn't enough, athletes are being taken out by the heat and humidity here. It was so unbearable, a Russian tennis player asked the umpire who would take responsibility if he died.
A lot of the competition schedule has been built where possible, depending on the sport, to accommodate avoid the hottest parts of the day, but that's not possible with every sport.
Players are now taking medical timeouts between sets, and matches have now been moved to late afternoon when it's cooler. Joy Malvin, CTV News, Tokyo.
The Alberta government is defending its decision to remove virtually all remaining COVID-19 restrictions, even as cases spike in the province.
Some folks were going to have questions, but I think that's why we're trying to do it in a thoughtful way, in a staged approach, based on really important metrics and milestones that were developed that are based on the science and based on the data.
Citing widespread vaccination rates, Alberta will begin handling COVID-19 like other respiratory viruses. Starting today, close contacts of people infected with the virus will no longer have to quarantine, but isolation will still be required for positive cases and people with symptoms. On August 16th, anyone who tests positive won't be mandated to quarantine anymore. Masks will not be mandatory on public transit, ride shares, and taxis, but they may still be required in hospitals or continuing care facilities.
The easing of pandemic restrictions is leading to an increased demand for donated blood in Canada.
The summertime, we always see kind of a rise in demand. People get back to their holidays, especially now that you're vaccinated, you're getting back to kind of a new normal. So at the summer months, we typically also see increased accidents where you would need blood donations, and then also the hospitals rise in demand.
There had been a reduced need due in part to less travel and the cancellation of all but the most critical surgeries. Now hospitals are trying to catch up on backlog procedures. Type O negative is especially in demand. It is the universal blood type used primarily in emergency rooms. Canadian Blood Service is extending hours at some donation centres and mobile clinics.
Meanwhile, Israel will become the first country to offer a third shot of the Pfizer vaccine. People over 60 can receive the booster in an effort to slow the spread of the Delta variant. Those who received their second dose at least 5 months ago will be eligible. Israel's president will be the first to get the supplementary shot tomorrow. The health ministry has twice reported a drop in the vaccine's efficacy against infection since the emergence of the highly transmissible variant.
The International Space Station was repositioned today by accident. It happened a few hours after the arrival of a Russian module. There was an unplanned restart of its engines. The astronauts were not in danger, but it caused the position of the space station to change. The engines of another module on the ISS were then activated to compensate and reposition the orbiting outpost. Russia says engine restart was due to residual fuel in the craft.
Back here at home, thousands of you voted, and now this endangered tiger cub has a name. The announcement from the Toronto Zoo after the break.
Oh, that's so cute. All right, we have dry conditions for this evening. There might be maybe a pop-up shower, but overall, we start to quiet down. If you're heading down to the game tomorrow, it is cool. This is not a normal daytime high. Sitting at 19, the other weather maker for your Friday, northwesterly winds anywhere from about 20 to 30 kilometers an hour. The temperature story right now is actually very humid out there with the temperature sitting, let's say, for example, in Uxbridge, it's not too bad, 20, humidex at 22, but closer in Toronto, we're sitting at 25, humidex at 32. Out towards Richmond Hill, humidex at 30 and feeling at 27 in Oshawa. There is rain in the extended forecast, sunshine as well, and a return to nicer daytime highs as well as temperatures. With the humidity, we'll have a full check on that extended forecast just after this break.
Today is International Tiger Day, and the Toronto Zoo marked the occasion with a big announcement.
After over 15,000 votes were cast online, we now know the name of the zoo's endangered tiger cub. The female Amur tiger was born at the end of April, and today the zoo revealed she will be named Mila. It comes from a Slavic word for dear one or beloved. She's been nursing well from her mother, Maisie, who took aim at the blocks put out by zookeepers to announce Mila's name. The two are part of a species survival plan launched after population in the wild fell to critically low levels. Those numbers have since improved.
A heat wave scorched Southeast Europe today. Temperatures rose above 40 degrees in parts of Greece and across much of the region. Forecasters say the heat wave is expected to extend into next week, making it one of the most severe recorded since the mid-1980s. Residents are being advised to stay indoors and avoid direct exposure to the midday sun.
And to the other extreme, in Brazil, a fierce cold snap prompted snowfall in the southern part of the country last night. More than 30 cities were affected, and some still had below freezing temperatures early today. The mercury is expected to keep dropping, with possible snowfall in other areas. Wow, look at that.
Below seasonal tomorrow, but now I'm thankful after seeing that.
Yeah, I guess you have to look for sort of for the silver lining in this weather forecast that we have. Let's get straight to what we have in terms of the daytime highs, your conditions. But first, weather is brought to you by Trane. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a Trane. Okay, so we had an okay start to the day in terms of, you know, the cloud cover, but then the rain moved in, and that was extensive through most of the morning into the afternoon. And then we finally have a little bit of, I would say, some sunshine out there. It's still a bit cloudy. That'll start to break up into the overnight hours. We might see the risk of a thunderstorm just because we have cooler air in place. It's actually very humid out there as we speak. This is a look at forecast radar. Now, we clear out and then watch the timeline of it as we make our way into Saturday. The cloud cover builds in. Right now, the showers appear to be at about the lunch hour, extending for a portion of the afternoon. It's a little bit spotty, a bit iffy, and then through the evening as well, overnight into early Sunday morning. If you're heading up to the cottage over the next few days, you know, indoor activities, a board game, it's going to be cool as well as wet for Wasega Beach, Muskoka, the Corthas. Things do improve, but really not until we get into Monday. And by Monday, much of southern and southwestern Ontario will hold in a nicer weather pattern, not just with daytime highs, but also just drier conditions. Right now, there's a hot spot down towards Windsor. We're holding in this weather pattern, 30, feeling at 38. For us here in Toronto, we're sitting at 25. Feeling closer to 33. This is a dramatic shift in the daytime high for the overnight low, sitting at 15 degrees. And as we make our way into tomorrow, the daytime high, it doesn't move all that much into the overnight hours. By the afternoon, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud, and it will be quite windy, actually. 19 is your expected temperature. We should sit closer to about 26, 27 on average. It is late July, making our way slowly into August, and this high pressure, by the time we get into the end of the weekend, into early next week, that will dominate. This is just an interesting weather story. Off towards the West Coast, temperatures with that heat at anywhere from about 35 all the way up to 40 degrees, and that is not normal. So, yeah, just across the board, we have just interesting weather stories and patterns. 19, again, for your daytime high on Friday. Saturday, we're looking at showers. 23 in the forecast. Not the best day to start the long weekend. Sunday, it looks like the shower activity should stay into the morning hours. 24 is the daytime high by the time we make our way finally into Monday. Clear skies, sunshine, and a nice temperature. 24, and things finally return to much more, I would say, normal conditions and temperatures. Temperatures 26 for Tuesday, heading into the week with sunshine as well, 26 to 25. So the rest of your Thursday, it's still humid, cooler temperatures for your Friday, and then showers right now expected for the start of the long weekend. We'll be back just after this break.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
Brittany Crew has been training for the Tokyo Olympics for 5 years.
And while a recent injury almost derailed her dream, she would not let it stop her from getting back on track.
Up to the circle is Canada's Brittany Crew.
For more than a decade, Brittany Crew has been throwing the shot put, and from high school to York University, all the way to the Rio Olympics and Commonwealth Games, she has always strived to throw farther. And as a full-time athlete, she is in Tokyo to do just that.
It's strictly going to be business, and it's not going to be as fun, I guess. But this might help a lot of athletes actually stay focused during the games instead of getting distracted with all the fun activities in the village. I think I've had a pretty positive outlook on the COVID situation. It did put a damper a little bit on the excitement of the Olympics because we were aiming for 2020 and it was so exciting. And then we learned that Team Canada was going to pull out of it. And then the next day, it was just a whirlwind of emotions because then they canceled the Olympics and postponed it to the next year.
Crew is a four-time Canadian shot put champion, unable to defend her title this year due to injury, coming just weeks before the Tokyo Games. She battled back and is ready to compete tomorrow.
It's going to be the best Olympics for women's shot put in terms of clean sport. So it's going to be so super, super tough. And if I PB and I throw a personal best and I don't get a medal, I'm still going to be super, super happy and proud of myself.
And regardless of her finish, the 27-year-old says women's shot put is a sport older women excel in. And so she's looking forward to the next Olympics in Paris in 2024. And Brittany Crew's event is set to start just after 6 o'clock tomorrow morning, Toronto time.
There's been a wave of support for U.S. gymnastics star Simone Biles after she pulled out of several events to focus on her mental health, including from several celebrities.
It takes a lot of courage to do that. And I'm just really blown away, I think, by this younger generation who are showing my generation how to do it.
Hugh Jackman said Simone Biles and Naomi Osaka, who withdrew from tournaments for her mental health, are showing the importance of speaking your truth. Justin Bieber told Biles he's proud of her decision, adding, "Sometimes our no's are more powerful than our yeses." And Biles reacted to the statements of encouragement online, tweeting, "The outpouring of love and support I've received has made me realize I'm more than my accomplishments and gymnastics, which I never truly believed before."
The Toronto Raptors will select fourth overall in tonight's NBA draft. And general manager Bobby Webster says the team has narrowed its list of potential picks.
They get to meet with, you know, Coach Nurse. They get to meet with, you know, our medical staff. So you really get an opportunity for the whole organization to get a feel for them, not just as basketball players, but as people. And at the same time, you know, they're, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. And so you also have the opportunity to project them and you know, try to figure out the type of character and characteristics that, you know, we value.
Webster says the Raptors want someone who will be a good long-term fit, but he insists the club is keeping all options open heading into the draft. The Detroit Pistons have the first pick, followed by Houston, Cleveland, and then Toronto.
Meanwhile, the Blue Jays made a move today to address arguably their biggest need, improving the bullpen. Toronto acquired closer Brad Hand from Washington. The 31-year-old lefty had 21 saves and 21 opportunities with the Nationals this season. Hand signed a one-year, $10.5 million deal with Washington in the offseason. The Blue Jays sent catcher Riley Adams to the Nationals in return for Hand.
Uninterrupted Canada has announced its latest release as it delves into untold sports stories, a documentary on the history of black hockey players. Black Ice will explore the journey of black pioneers in the sport, from the creation of the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes to the modern NHL. Director Hubert Davis said in a statement, "I think it is more important than ever before for all generations, particularly young people of color, to understand and see the diverse faces who have contributed and shaped one of the essential fabrics of our country." LeBron James and Drake are serving as executive producers for Black Ice in partnership with Bell Media. CTV is a division of Bell Media.
Representatives for Bob Odenkirk have confirmed he suffered a heart-related incident when he collapsed on set earlier this week. Odenkirk was filming the final season of Better Call Saul in New Mexico when the incident took place. The 58-year-old actor was rushed to hospital, where he is now recovering. AMC, which is producing the Breaking Bad prequel, says Odenkirk is receiving excellent care and they're holding him close in their thoughts. And Odenkirk's family's asked for privacy as he recovers, but his son Nate took to Twitter last night to share a short message. He's going to be okay.
Scarlett Johansson is suing Disney over its handling of the release of the superhero flick Black Widow.
"My plan was to drive us away."
"Well, your plan sucks."
Johansson plays the title role in the movie, which was originally set to debut in 2020. Because of the pandemic, it was released in theaters and on streaming this month. A lawsuit filed today claims Johansson's contract guaranteed a release in movie theaters only. A source tells the Wall Street Journal the change could cost the actor tens of millions of dollars. Disney says the claims have no merit.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. We've got what you want. Settle in for the night with some great TV. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
Because it's a celebration. It has been 670 days since we have been home, and we are pumped about it.
Updating our top stories, the Blue Jays return tomorrow for their first home game since September 2019. 15,000 fans will be allowed in wearing masks, and they'll be able to choose between physically distanced and non-distanced seating.
She's this incredibly inspiring human being, and she's this, you know, really amazing, inspiring, incredible athlete. And then at home, she's just kind of like my little sister who just likes to hang out and watch movies.
Penny Oleksiak's family will be among millions of Canadians cheering on the 21-year-old Torontonian tonight. She'd become Canada's most decorated Olympian by winning any medal in the 100-meter freestyle.
And as we passed him right about here, he stopped and body checked me into the fence here. I fell down to the ground, at which point he yelled at me.
Sam Brody believes he was assaulted in the Yonge and Eglinton area yesterday because he is Jewish. Brody says he's still shaken up. Police are investigating the incident.
And remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date anytime through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. While many Canadians are focusing on the Olympics or summer plans, what about the potential for a federal election?
Well, there's plenty of speculation over the possibility of heading to the polls, and that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We are joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Reshmi Nair. Now, Reshmi, the federal NDP leader, maintains he is not looking for an election.
Yes, he has written a letter to the Governor General asking her to turn down any requests from the Prime Minister, which hasn't happened in almost a century. So we're going to discuss that with Jagmeet Singh. He will be returning to CP24 tonight live to have that conversation.
And also, Nick, as the province works out its back-to-school plan, some are calling on the government to include some key elements.
That's right. We're expecting that plan sometime the next week. That's what the Premier is saying. But the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario and the Ontario Professional Society of Engineers, they've come up with open letters to the Minister of Education talking about mask mandates, talking about ventilation, talking about mandatory vaccinations for some. So they kind of gel in certain areas when it comes to ventilation. So we're bringing on the CEOs of both organizations to talk to us about the importance of what they want to see in that plan when it comes out next week.
All right. Thank you, Nick and Reshmi. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up slightly to 80.34 cents U.S. American benchmark oil was up 123 to 73.62 a barrel. And the TSX Composite Index gained 81 points to close at 20,311.
The city's launching a new initiative aimed at preventing collisions when drivers turn left at traffic lights. It's called the Left Turn Calming Pilot. Speed bumps will be added at intersections to encourage motorists to turn more slowly and at a safer angle. The change will be made at 8 intersections at first, all of them chosen based on collision history and safety reviews. The results will be evaluated over the next year.
Small business advocates are calling on the province to move up reopening plans in regions with high vaccination rates. Ontario has now passed one target to exit step 3. 80% of eligible residents have at least one shot, but restrictions won't lift further until 75% are fully vaccinated and 70% have a first dose in each health unit. The Canadian Federation of Independent Business says any region that's already reached that threshold should be allowed to fully reopen now. The province hasn't indicated its plans are likely to change, though.
The CFIB is also calling on Queen's Park to make plans to keep businesses open if cases rise. Multi-platform writer Sean Davidson has more details on that request. And you can find his coverage on our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Tonight, heated reaction over one province's decision to drop pandemic restrictions.
What do you do when your enemy is your government?
The jarring shift in Alberta as COVID infections jump, later on CTV National News.
Coming up on CP24 tonight, preventing a snap election. What Jagmeet Singh's letter to the Governor General means for the feds. The NDP leader joins live. And long-distance surgery. How some hospitals are using groundbreaking tech to save lives. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
Time now for Toronto Together and a local company with an appetite for helping our frontline workers.
BioRaw is working hard to deliver healthy meals to hospitals and other places to sustain staff during long, busy shifts.
We hear time and time again that they're being fed donuts and junk food and not things that are going to help support their immunity. And we want to keep our frontline workers healthy, empowered, powerful, and fueled with the best food possible.
Orrin Epstein says he chooses to use his business as a force for good. Since the pandemic began, BioRaw has donated thousands of meals and PPE to local hospitals, shelters, and charity organizations.
All right, nice work. Nalini, what can we expect tonight?
It's still humid out there, and unfortunately, tomorrow it is going to be on the cooler side. Here's a look at what you can expect. Your evening at a glance, the temperature will sit at 21, feeling at 26 through the evening hours. Your sunset, there's a few sunny breaks out there right now, 8:45 p.m. Quick look at satellite radar. We're clearing out. Unfortunately, we do have that shower activity that will likely hit us into the sort of morning hours on Saturday. For tomorrow, we stay on the dry side. Right now, oddly enough, winds are sitting at 38 with the humidex. Here's a look at your 7-day. 19 is the daytime high for Friday, and then Saturday showers leading into Sunday as well. The best day of the long weekend, Monday, with sunshine stretching into early next week. That's your forecast.
All right, thanks, Nalini. Be sure to join Raheem Ladani later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight with Reshmi Nair and Nick Dixon begins momentarily on CP24.
For Nalini and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.